phenomenal day. The Mishnah that we'll talk about today is the source for making the bracha of Shachianu, which is, I think, just about the most beautiful bracha that we have. Shachianu, that God gave us life. You know, you can't take that for granted. You can't take life itself for granted. Kobe Bryant, right? V'kiyamanu, not just Shachianu, that he gave us life, but V'kiyamanu, that he gave us vitality. You know, Kel Chai V'kayam. Kayam implies a certain quality of life. V'higiyanu is a reference to the journey, that we made it. Everybody's journey in life takes some twists and turns, that's for sure. We all have our ups and downs. We all have our good days and challenging days. And Shachianu, V'kiyamanu, V'higiyanu, Lazmanazeh, it's a very beautiful bracha. Bana bayis chadash, a person builds a new house. A house is significant in halacha. A person who builds a new house, they get a get-out-of-war, they get a get-out-of-war pass, not a melchames mitzvah, but if it's an optional war. V'kana kelim chadashim omer baruch shechianu. So the question is, what does it mean to acquire new items? Now, there is a debate in the Gemara. Let's say, I'm going to date myself here. When I was a kid, the most popular shoe were called Air Jordans, okay? Air Jordans. So let's say you had a guy, a friend like this, who had a pair of Air Jordans, and he gets another pair of Air Jordans, to my zero. So does he make a Shachianu on his Air Jordans? So there's a question as to whether you make a Shachianu on shoes. There's actually a Tosfos that says you probably shouldn't make a Shachianu on shoes. But I don't think that's true today, because shoes are very... You know how much people pay for shoes? You know how much ladies pay for shoes? You know how much people pay for their... whatever it is today, not their Air Jordans, but their LeBrons or, you know, God knows what. So they pay a lot of money for that. So if you have one and you get another one, so we end up poskening that it doesn't matter, because if you're getting another one, it probably means it brings you joy. And then there's a halachic debate. So many of the Rishonim, I would even say most of the Rishonim, say it's like the simple words in the Mishnah, that it has to do with the Binyan Bayis Chadash or the Kinyan on Kelim Chadashim, it's when you acquire them. But that's not the common practice. When's it our practice to actually say the Shachianu? Not when we actually purchase it, but when we put it on, when we start using it. You know, the question is, why should that be? Why not just follow the simple reading of the Mishnah? Kana kelim chadashim. And the answer is, because when do people really feel the joy? People feel the joy when they get it, or people feel the joy when they wear it for the first time, when they get to put on that nice suit, when they get to put on that nice tie, when they get to pump up those Air Jordans. I think the Jordans were the ones that used to pump. I'm not sure. I'm going to check, get a little confirmation on that. I don't know. But they were used to pump up the one. There's a different one. The Reeboks. Okay, thank you, Ellie. Saying you get to pump that thing up for the first time. That's when you should make the Shachianu. I say between the second and the third pump. No, that's already a detail. Okay. What's that? You wore the George Gervins, I know, okay. Mivarech al hara me'ein hatova ve'al hatova me'ein hara. So here's a complicated situation. Let's say something ostensibly bad happens, but it could have a good outcome. Or something ostensibly good happens, but it could have a bad after effect. Dr. Tal Becker was speaking for Rabbi Feldman's Yortzeit this past year at Or Sadja. So he said, he spends his life doing foreign policy. So he said it seemed to him that at least 50%, this is a guy in the field, says at least 50% of foreign policy decisions made by governments backfire. Okay, so, you know, in life there's all these unintended consequences. So the Gemara gives a case. Let's say your field gets flooded out. A disaster, right? So, you know, you're not going to be happy about that. But the truth is that sometimes in agriculture, what that can actually do is the subsequent years, the fields become much more fertile. So brachos, basically, the principle is relate to the present. I'll give you the opposite case. Let's say somebody experienced something which was really good, but it could be, you know, with a bad outcome after a certain amount of time. So that example would be, let's say a person finds something valuable, doesn't have any owner, and then you're concerned, you know, maybe after some time, a person's going to come after you because they heard that you found something of value. You should still make your hatove ametiv. Just like on the shmura, you'd make your dayan ha'emes. So brachos really are reflective of the importance of the present moment. You know, we're not trying to predict the future here because ein safek motzi mide vada. You never know what tomorrow is going to bring, let alone next year, let alone next year's crop. So we always stick in terms of brachos in the present. So the Mishnah goes on to say, "Hatzoik l'sha'avar harezo tefila shab." So if a person davens for something that already happened, so that's a tefillah shav. That's not a good thing. That would even implicate the bracha of atala in terms of all the brachos that you may have said in the tefillah. So Kate said, "Haisa ishto meuberes." Let's say your wife is pregnant. Ve'amar, and you start davening. Yehi ratzon she'teled ishti zachar. May it be God's will that it's a boy. So, you know, the technician will tell you, you know, I could tell you what it is, I could tell you, I could not tell you what it is, but it is what it is. So, you know, that kind of a tefillah, it's already been decided whether what the gender of the baby is. Or, hayababa derech v'shem akol tzvacha b'ir, coming along the way and you hear something bad is going on in the city. V'amar hiratzon shilu elu b'nei besi, say, I hope the people who are in trouble aren't the people from my family. Harezo tefillah shav. That's not a good tefillah, because whatever is going on is going on. It's just that you don't know it yet. Okay, so those seem like pretty straightforward examples. I will tell you something very interesting that has major halachic import for now. So it happens to be, I'm picking on the Mishnah a little bit with the quibble, because the Mishnah's point is very clear. But there is a very famous source in the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel, which states the following, that Leah, we know, had six sons and one daughter. But there is a Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel that says that she was pregnant with Yosef, and Rachel was pregnant with Dina. Now you're going to say, yeah, Rachel had Yosef and Leah had Dina. I know. But the Targum Yonasan says that they actually were fetuses in the opposite wombs. Okay, and then Leah started davening that Rachel shouldn't be embarrassed and that somehow she should be the one to have the girl. And she already had six sons. V'achar yaldabas, v'tikrat shemo Dina. And that Rachel should at least have one son, Yosef. That's what Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel says. So apparently that worked according to him. So it might not be the best example in the Mishnah to say, my wife is pregnant, you know, I shouldn't daven for the gender, because we have this example. Now, why do I bring this up? There is probably, I don't know, it's hard for me to quantify this exactly, but I would say one of the three most hotly debated issues in halacha in 2020 is how we determine maternal status. So you're probably sitting here thinking, I'll tell you how you determine maternal status. You see which one gives birth. She's the mom. So it's not so simple, because we know there's the genetic material, there's the person who contributed the egg, and then there's the person who actually delivers the child. And we know that today, thanks to technology, there are a lot more options than there used to be. So based on that source that I just quoted, right, who gave the genetic material for Yosef? Whose egg was it, really? According to that, it was Leah. And Rachel is the one who gave birth, and yet we say Rachel is the mother. So Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, one of the great poskim, especially in this area of halacha, says that we could use this as a proof that the birth mother is halachically considered the actual mother. Okay, and that was really the accepted psak for many, many, many years. Some people may be aware that in the last 10, 15 years, first in Israel and then in America, there's been really some challenging of this issue. And at this point in time, it's really just a widespread machlokas. There are those who disregard this source. They say that's really an agadita. And they have other sources that discuss the issue. The Gemara sometimes discusses transferring a fetus from one animal to the other animal. And the question is which animal is considered to be the parent of that particular offspring. So in any event, there are basically three different opinions. One opinion is that the birth mother is the mother. Well, the other opinion is that the genetic material contributor is actually the mother. And there's a third opinion, which Rabbi Bleich raises, which is that both actually could have the status of the mother. Now, you can imagine that this gets very complicated, because let's say one of them is Jewish and the other one isn't. So a child has a fully Jewish mother, and a child has an equally fully non-Jewish mother. What is the status of that child? When we say that a child whose mother is Jewish, does that mean you only need one of your moms to be Jewish or all of your mothers to be Jewish? It's a very complicated case. So Isaac's already shaking his head. He's saying, thank God I didn't go into the rabbinate. I don't want to be the one to decide this issue. Sometimes I feel that way too. So this is actually very complicated. It comes up all the time. It's more and more prevalent than you would ever think it is. So, you know, generally speaking, what we advise is to be on the safe side, to do what we call a giur l'chumra, that you could take the child to the mikvah and make sure that when the child is bar mitzvah, you have a little conversation with them and make sure that everything is understood, because God forbid, we don't want any problems later on. The person's about to walk down the chuppah and somebody comes running out with throws the red flag and says, we're sending this to New York to be reviewed. So we don't want that situation, just before somebody's wedding. Dennis, go ahead.
Yeah, so